Don't get boxed in by a whiteboarding app with limited functionality. Try Lucid, the visual collaboration platform that covers your team's entire spectrum of work. With Lucid, you can host virtual brainstorms and so much more. Diagram important processes, conduct cross-functional planning on an infinite visual canvas, power your workflows with data and intelligent automation, and bring your best ideas to life. Try Lucid for free at lucid.co/Spotify.
COVID was completely my fault. Everything that happened to me during COVID was 100% my fault.
So this is the $1 million you lost?
$1 million, 100% my fault. People didn't pay me, 100% my fault. Our jobs were delayed, 100% my fault. Because if I take responsibility for everything, then it's within my means to control that. It's within my means to make the change that needs to be made.
$100 million. There's websites that you can build yourself that they'd be able to link that. They're not building the radar.
And this is where you look at it and go, someone's pocket's being lined somewhere.
But how much are they lining it with? He can't have any spare room in his pocket.
We're doing a crossover for a single home, a couple townhouses in Kew. We got the permit. Oh, great. So can we book an inspection? Oh, that's 20 business days. 20 business days for you to just arrange someone to look at it and leave. And we're doing it to your spec.
Okay, g'day everyone. Welcome to another episode. Today we're here with George Passos.
Passos
from Pascon Building, CEO and founder.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Take it away. Tell us what you do, why you're here today in this podcast.
That's it, mate. Well, look, I've been in construction for a long time, 25 years. Worked in tier one construction companies and then worked my way down to starting my own business about 10 years ago. 10-year anniversary this year, which is fantastic.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Great achievement. Very proud of that. Been building predominantly high-end residential homes during that time. And done a little bit of commercial as well, have my commercial license too. And then lately, over the last couple of years, stepped into the coaching and mentoring space and showing builders how to run successful construction companies through all the lessons and experience I've had over the years. So,
and what's that called?
Builder Elite. So Builder Elite's the other business that we have running alongside Pascon. They're different companies and not really affiliated, but yeah, definitely been a new space for me to look at as well.
Let's talk about that for a little bit. How have you found it?
Yeah, look, it's been, I find we've been doing it really solidly with proper structure, proper events, proper trainings for the last 2 years. And we'd have over 1,000 builders attend seminars and trainings and all that sort of stuff. And I find that people genuinely want to be better. The people that are there in the room, they genuinely want to improve. They want something that's missing out of their life and they're coming to an event like that for us to help them with it. But looking interestingly is the people that then want to take the next step and go, okay, I've come here to this event. How do I get better now? A lot of people come in the moment and they feel really happy and motivated to go out there and crush it. But then you see them in the room 6 months later and they don't really take that action to help them get to where they want to be. Mm. So I find that's probably the biggest interesting point that I've seen over the last couple of years with all the things that we're doing.
And why do you think that is? Just leading you along here, because it's actually really challenging, because I get it a lot with subbies and stuff and people that I work with that they say that they want to take on something, do something, or, you know, I've had a few people ask me about mentor programs, which I don't think I'd be the best mentor because I still have so much left to learn.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Look, and I don't sit there going, I realized from an early stage of when I started Builder Elite. Look, when I first started Builder Elite, it was literally me just doing Zoom calls with people that wanted to have a chat and they were paying me for my time. And then I was like, this isn't great. This is just me regurgitating shit from experience that I've had over the years.
Yeah.
And then I actually went out and got training myself from mentors and advisors and coaches. I spent, at least a couple hundred grand on how to speak on stage. And also I became an NLP coach as well, so neuro-linguistics programming on how you communicate, how you talk, influence, all that sort of stuff. So I actually got training on how to speak on stage properly professionally before I then went out and started doing events. And, you know, now I can step up on stage and I don't think twice about it. You know, I don't get nervous. I know exactly
to do a few events over my time. And
everyone thinks they're good. I used to actually think I was quite good public speaker. Like, as in, I would get a little bit nervous, but I used to think I'm confident I can go out there and crush it. But when you actually learn the proper structure, where to stand, what tonality to use, which hand to raise, there's a real science behind it. And now I can see someone on stage and go, yep, you're trained, or no, you're not.
Really?
Yeah, massively. It's a huge thing.
And do you think that it has a different sort of effects on the crowd?
If without a doubt. There is no doubt about it whatsoever. Because now that I am trained, I can influence the crowd in ways that I want to or guide them down a certain path. Now, I want to make it really clear, not manipulate. I'm not there to manipulate people. This isn't a cult.
No, you're trying to take them on a journey.
I'm taking them on the journey. And in order for me to give them the best experience, I need to be the best on stage.
Well, I think that people often, and even myself included at a couple of the events that I've done, which I'm, like I said, I'm shit ass at speaking on stage. And sure. It put me in a pub. I'm brilliant. Yeah. You know, put me in a
Dutch courage.
Yeah. Even before I have any, I can tell a story. I can have people engaged.
It's you're in a comfortable zone there.
Then put me in front of in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. I was probably in front of a few hundred people.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you look out and all of those funny little things you had to say, and not only funny, but the important things that you had to deliver, they just get lost in mumbles and jumbles. So, I can definitely see that with anything. Like, if you want to be a good tennis player,
got to train.
Train to play tennis.
That's it. That's exactly what it was for me. Because I didn't want to get up there and just ramble and just talk shit and try to be the person to get them to need it. I realized I needed to develop myself in that area. And now that we've been doing it for 2 years, that's my practice too. Like, I've been on stage quite a bit, especially this year. We've hit the events quite hard. And
you're traveling just a way to Australia, also?
Yeah. So we've done every state except Northern Territory and Tasmania.
Is that there the no builders in the NT? No,
there would be. I'm sure there's builders in Darwin. I just haven't looked to go there. Look, we just went to Perth last week for the first time. Perth was fantastic. I was really surprised. I actually didn't think it would be as engaging as it was, and we got a lot of people to come to the next training as well in Melbourne. So people are willing to travel as well. This is what I'm saying. There are definitely people out there that want more, that want to get better at what they're doing. And I think that's the biggest downfall in the industry, right? Because what I found over the years is most builders are fantastic practitioners. Like, they know how to build. At my trainings, I don't teach anyone where to put studs, how to pour concrete, how to put a roof on. I don't teach any of that stuff at all. I'm assuming you have a fair level of knowledge. That's why you got your license. And unfortunately, the authorities in this country, not just Victoria, they let us down. You know, if you go to the Building and Plumbing Commission once, the VBA, and ask them for advice or ask them to help you and stuff, they don't give you that.
Did you, like, so that's across the board. That doesn't happen to just the VBA. That happens
that is
with
every
you
state I've gone to.
You try and get power. So I did a subdivision where I was trying to get power. It took me 18 months to get power.
Yep.
And I had to pay for it. Then I now have to pay for the power that I'm using. Now, mind you, it was a six-figure bill to install power.
Yeah.
To which then I have to pay for every, I don't know, what are they, joules, megawatts, gigawatts, I don't even know, whatever it is. You still have to pay after 18 months. It's not even a great service. I've got a permit going in for something else, a crossing. It's meant to be 10 days on, is it VicSmart or one of the, I don't know.
Whoever it is,
it's been 6 weeks and we're going forwards and backwards because it's gone from, listen to this one, it went from the planning team, they took a while to have a look at it, to the engineering team, they took a while to have a look at it.
For a crossover,
For a crossover.
For a piece of concrete to get cars in and out of the property. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit bigger than a car's, but same shit.
A bit bigger than, and a bit more Rio.
They have a standard as well for it. Exactly. It's not like we're outside of scope. Then after that went to the engineering team, it then went to the assets team because we're crossing over council assets.
Yep.
After that, we thought we were all gravy. What do I get told yesterday? Parks and Gardens. It's gone to Parks and Gardens because you're going to be removing native flora or whatever it is. And you go, you've got to be fucking, it's a driveway, guys.
It's a joke. It is a joke. Local government and a lot of those things, they're just broken, right? And this is partly why Builder Elite exists, right, in the first place, because I hate people that complain about shit, right? Like, do something about it or stop complaining.
Mm.
That's what it comes down to. And I could sit there and say, oh, the VBA let us down. WorkSafe are useless. You know, Master Builders and all these guys, like, they don't do anything to help us. Like, we're all on our own and blah, 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 blah. And, yeah, you could say and complain about that, but ultimately, either you do something about it yourself, all right, and go out there and create the change, or you just get on with doing your own thing and stop complaining.
Well, you have to play within the parameters that are set also. Like, yeah, it's not like you can go out and we can decide to build a house without a building permit these days.
No, that's like, exactly right. Like, there are things that you have to go through. And this is where, you know, they're trying to hit a target of 1 million homes a year. I could have told you that that was a blatant lie when they're using it as a policy to win the next election. You're lying. You are lying. You're never going to do that. Whatever it was. It was eight. Ridiculous. No, it was less. As in single, like eight, yes, not 800,000, like
no,
eight.
No.
Yeah,
eight.
It is, the actual, so under what needs to be done. It's ridiculous. And if they want to improve it, mate, you put me in power, I'll get the thing done in the next year. Listen, I'll build you a million.
Oh, is that what the plan is?
That's it. I can see you. Mate, that's the only way I'm here. That's the only reason I'm here.
I can see you doing that.
Oh, look, I think, again, I don't want to waste time with Premier. I just need the top dog. PM, just let me step in, I'll fix everything. People wouldn't like me.
There needs to be something fresh because at the end of the day, like, you sit there, and I don't even think you have to be in the industry to hear that we need to build 1.2 million homes, and everyone goes, yeah,
exactly,
bullshit.
Right.
But we still listen and everything else like that, and it just goes on and on. Now, actually, there's a current affair thing, the actual show, $100 million on a website for the Bureau of Meteorology,
yeah.
We'll call it BOM so that I sound more intelligent. $100 million.
Hey.
There's websites that you can build yourself that they'd be able to link that. They're not building the radar.
No.
They were just the fucking website.
It's ridiculous. And this is where you look at it and go, someone's pocket's being lined somewhere.
But how much are they lining it with? He can't have any spare room in his pocket.
It's like the bins the other day. You know that one? The 33 mil for those bins?
Yeah, yeah. 300 grand each, and they got built in the South Australian prison.
Yeah, okay. Well, just look at that. I'm in construction, right?
Yeah.
I look at it and go, okay, I've got a box that I have to build.
Yeah.
I'm roughly, okay, I'll give you $5,000, and that's probably expensive.
Delivered.
Like built and delivered for a metal box that is welded. Okay, maybe it needs a few more safety features because you're putting machetes in it or whatever the hell you're doing with it. Maybe it needs a little bit more security. Like, so be it.
You know what? Double it. Triple it.
Do you know what I mean? And, like, so this is what I mean. Somewhere along the line, someone's pocket's getting lined, or they're wasting money, or they're funneling it somewhere else.
But I don't think it always needs to be as I'm going to use a big word here, clandestine, you know. I don't always think it needs to be that. It's these government bodies that we're talking about that says that you have to go to the asset team that then has to go to the, you know, to the candlestick maker to see if you're allowed to build a driveway that then has to get, you know, the approval from the other government body, which is then going to get an approval from another. Yeah. And it's just this big circle that goes around where you pay permit fee after permit fee after permit fee, and it just – so that – because let's be honest, if it was super efficient, what are they going to do?
They're going to build. Things will get done. If it was super efficient, what are they going to do?
Jobs.
That's right. That's exactly right. And you know, similar thing. We're doing a crossover for a single home, a couple townhouses in Kew. And it's like, we got the permit. Oh, great. So can we book an inspection? Oh, that's 20 business days. 20 business days for you to just arrange someone to look at it and leave. And we're doing it to your spec.
Yeah,
like, that's what you're telling me. This is where it's
And where does my license come into play here? Because I have a license for this, which means that I am building it to spec, and I should know what that spec is. You've actually given me a test that says that I know what the spec is. Why do you need an inspector here?
Yeah.
You need a stick that says, if I do not build it to spec, then I'm going to hit you with a stick.
That's right.
Rather than all of this bullshit. Yeah,
you could talk about it for ages, you know what I mean? But this is where they need some efficiencies in that space. But coming back to why Builder Elite exists, there was a couple of things. During COVID, you know, we lost in the construction side of things like over $1 million during that time. And two things came out of that for me. One, I vowed for it never to happen again. So I tightened up, I plugged all the leaking holes in my bucket. And two, I said, well, I want to help other people not go through that either. Because, as I said, builders are great practitioners, but they're never taught the things they need to know when running a construction company, right? Because as good as a practitioner you are, when you get your license, it's almost a license to fail, right? No one teaches you how to manage your employees. No one says what contracts you need to use with them, or subby agreements, or head contracts, or inclusions in your head contracts, or how much money you should make, or how to manage your BAS, or how to do sales. Like, are you any good at sales? How do you do that? Or how much to pay someone? Like, you either guess, Google it, or speak to someone else that's done the exact same shit that you're doing and learning through their mistakes. Yep. And that's where so many builders are falling over.
You'd never believe it. They're learning that's through why their mistakes. That's why a lot of this podcast is here.
Yeah,
because well, there you go. The same deal across the trades.
Yep.
You can go and buy an excavator. No one teaches you how to read plans. No one teaches you how to quote to a job. You have to learn it yourself. You have to
make heaps of mistakes.
Bin lots of money. Yeah, like grab your money, throw it in the rubbish bin, and go, oh, I learned a lesson.
Yeah, learn a lesson there. And that's where I'm trying to bridge the gap and go, well, don't bin that money.
Yeah.
Like bring it here and invest it in yourself and go, let me show you the holes. Let me show you the things that we do. And I'm completely open and transparent too. So it's not like I don't have a scarcity mentality. I don't think by helping you win, I lose.
No.
I think if you win, I win.
There's plenty of builders.
With builders, but also with trades too.
With trades?
You know, absolutely. Absolutely. We mentioned this earlier, but, you know, when I'm selecting a trade, I don't look for me to how do I get one over this guy? How do I make so much money?
Let's get into builders and tradesmen then, because that's...
This is where it fails too, because too many people are like, all right, Jimmy, I want you to come do this. This is my budget. Okay, you know what? I've got another price. He's 50 grand cheaper. If you match it, I'll give you the job.
Yeah. Okay? Happens every day out in that office that you walked in. All the time.
And I understand that's real pressure from a lot of the trades perspective too. The way I see it is, again, a collaborative approach. Because if you win, I win.
Mm.
And if I win, you win. Because I can keep winning more work. I can keep giving you the work. And if you're winning on my job, what are you going to do?
Keep working for me.
And you're going to give the service. I call you up and I say, hey, mate, I'm in a pickle. I need this soil moved today. You say, George, no stress. And then you build that relationship with people and you deliver a far superior product than anyone else is delivering in the market. And, you know, people, it's a harmonious process on the job site.
Yeah.
And I'm really big on process and people working to our process. Look, as the builder, we take the risk. The majority of the risk on that particular build. You take the risk for your particular element of work, but we take the risk on everything. So we want to work at Pascon, and the way I see it, and I've instructed my whole team, is not going to the cheapest guy in the room. It's who's the best person suited for the project.
How do you find, however, because like, so the subcontractor, tradesman, whatever it might be, gets pressure to be cheap, because at the end of the day, these buildings have to stack up.
Yes, that's right.
And they have to stack up to the bank. And then they have to stack up in a different sort of way to the person who's purchasing the property.
Yeah.
Because if they're expensive and they can go down the road and get one cheaper, then they're just going to maybe go down the road and get one cheaper. So they have to stack up.
Yeah, which it has to be competitive. I've got no issues with that. I've got no issues with being competitive in the space and the market.
But when the demand is high and the supply is low, that works really well. When the supply is really high of tradesmen hunting for that work, and everyone in Melbourne has seen this in the last 12 months, because I know you've quoted a job and they've came in and they've gone, George, well, fucking 5 million. We got a quote for 3.8. And you go, I've got sustainable trades that really help me out on the work.
I'm at a place in my business now where I've established myself that I can walk away.
Yeah.
All right. So, and I do that now. You've got to be willing. The person who wins in any negotiation is the one who
is willing
cares
to
less.
Walk away.
Yeah, is the one's willing to walk away. And I know what things cost. Right. So we're in the high end space. And if I get a price in that, and that happens to me all the time, right, where they'll come in and say, this guy's 500 grand cheaper than you or $1 million cheaper than you. And I'm like, guys, I'm not bad at my job. Like I often stand in front of stage and say I'm the best, and I say this at almost every event, and say, g'day guys, my name's George, I am the best builder in the country, all right? And like, I get the weird looks, I go, I'm the best. Before I got on stage, I went onto Google, and I Googled it, and I'm still number one.
Still number one.
I'm the best builder in the country. I go, I don't say that to shit on you. I say that because if I don't believe I'm the best builder in the country, who else is going to believe it? Yeah, exactly. So then everything that follows, all my actions, all my beliefs, everything I do is in line with that value of me being the best builder in the country. So I'll look at that and I'll say, look, that's wrong. That cannot be built for that price. And if that's where you're at, we're out. But I won't even let it get to that stage in the first place. I go, well, where's your budget at? Okay, like tell me, this isn't a target. It's something that we're trying to ascertain where you're at and see if we're a good fit for you. Because if you tell me you have $3 million for a $5 million job, I just won't price it.
Yeah.
I'm out. Go speak to the other builder.
You know
what? You'll get in a world of pain. You cannot build it for the price that you're looking at. And I've got a job now, or sorry, an inquiry, that's the case. They're like, oh, we got 1.8. Okay, this is a $2.5 million job. I'm not going to lie to you. This is what it is. If you've got someone telling you that they can do it for 1.8, run like you're on fire. And consumers have responsibility here. You know, you go on the news. I don't watch the news anyway, but it's always, oh, poor consumer, poor this. Oh, their builder went broke. They did this. You selected the fucking builder. Take some responsibility,
mm-hmm.
right? You had a price probably at the 2.5 and you went for the 1.8 thinking, oh, I've got 600 grand to play with.
Sorry for interrupting this episode. I may as well do my own ads on here rather than just having YouTube ads. ConExpo has its last discount code up now. It's going to last all the way to the expo. It's Starbucks 20 and get you 20% off of your tickets. So don't buy them at full price. Look forward to seeing you all there. Thanks. Well, so here's the other part about it, is all of these contractual conditions over the top of a builder,
yep.
which then some of them get passed down to the subcontractor or tradesman underneath, yes. being liquidated damages.
Yes.
Bank guarantees is what you guys have to put up.
Or retention.
And retention, yep. or some sort of security, we'll call it.
Again, yeah, security.
Is that what actually ends up happening? So that at that $1.8 million price, if they can get them to deliver $1.5 million worth of work, you know, for paying only one,
yeah.
and they fall over, then they can put in that extra money to try and finish it and still come out in front.
It doesn't work that way. It'll never work that way. I've taken over projects from other builders that have gone broke in the past, and it doesn't work out being cheaper for them.
I have taken over jobs of earth movers who have gone broke, yeah. and it is always a nightmare.
Yeah, that's right. It's always harder. We're taking more responsibility. We're taking responsibility for other people's work. It's going to be more expensive. It's never going to be cheaper. It never is cheaper to go with the cheapest price. So I always look at that with my trades. I've got a core group of trades that I look at, say plumbers. All right, I'll have 2 to 3 plumbers mm-hmm. that I trust that I will use on my jobs. Okay, and they all sign subcontract agreements. We all do detailed scope of works in every single trade. So I do a scope of works with all my trades, not to pull one over them, but to go, hey, your price is reflective of all this work. So that way, whenever we get to a certain time of the job, no one's turning around going, oh, I didn't allow for that, or this not included, that's not included. I said, hang on.
There's a piece of paper.
And then if I tell you, hey, do that work, and you go, no, that's not part of my scope, and I look at it, I go, oh, yeah, you're right, how much?
It's so interesting because the scope can be used as like a document that can clarify everything.
Yeah.
Or it can be used as a bat to hit the subby with. I've had work with some people who discuss the meaning of singular words of the scope.
Again, that's not a collaborative approach, is it?
No, definitely not.
That's I'm trying to get one over you.
Definitely not.
I'd rather have a conversation than go to the contract anyway.
Oh, yeah.
The only time I go to the contract is for specifics. I've allowed for 13 basins. Oh, there's 15. Oh, okay, well, here's an extra $500. Put 15 in.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. So that's when I would refer to a contract from a specific point of view. But I'm not going to say, oh, the contract says on this day you must do this and you've done it the day after, well, get fucked. You know, so I collaborative approach. And then people say, well, how do you get people to work at, especially in the residential space? It's like, oh, how do you get people to work on payment terms, on retention or signed contracts? Like, I can't do any of that. And I say, guys, I do that with all of my trades. You can mm-hmm. do it. And I go, but the reason you're not doing it is because you're not finding the right people to work with. And when you find the right people that know how you operate, that want to work collaboratively, that know they're going to get paid, then it's a whole ecosystem. And it really begins, again, you've got to qualify the client. So from a builder's point of view, if you have that process with your client, hey, client, this is our process. This is when you have to pay us. We get paid on this day so we can pay everyone else. If that whole ecosystem works as one, people
dial in a little bit to that part because, you know, the part that no one likes to actually talk about, everyone talks about subbies not getting paid.
Yeah.
What about builders not getting paid?
Happens all the time.
Happens more than this.
Yeah, and that's a huge pressure that happens. Like we've had it on, I'd like to say it hasn't happened, but it has happened to me a lot, especially during COVID. COVID was two things, right? COVID was completely my fault. Everything that happened to me during COVID was 100% my fault.
So this is the $1 million you lost?
$1 million, 100% my fault, all right? People didn't pay me, 100% my fault. All right. Our jobs were delayed. 100% my fault.
Yeah.
All right. Because if I take responsibility for everything, then it's within my means to control that. It's within my means to make the change that needs to be made. Whereas if I go, no, no, that was Daniel Andrews' fault. That was my client's fault. No, that was this person's fault. Well, then I'm passing power onto them.
That mentality just doesn't end up being a growth.
Yeah.
You're like, you do not grow after that mentality.
We had six projects during COVID that were, I'll just make it easy, they were $10,000 a month in prelims. Okay, yep. That's roughly where we were running with supervision, with all that sort of stuff. And then each one of those projects was delayed by 6 months because of COVID. We couldn't build as quickly as we wanted to. So six projects, $10,000 a month. Okay, that's a lot of money just in holding costs of the site that I never allowed
Let alone anything.
Let alone inflation, let alone escalation, all that sort of stuff. And then you get to it, you finally battle through the worst period in construction and you get to the end and then you get clients that don't pay you the final bill. Oh, well, you were late, so we want LDs. Or no, I'm not paying for that, or this, or blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, okay, and that's where it blows out again. So it is one of the hardest things to really control, because at the start of a project, everyone is best friends. You know, everyone's happy, everyone's excited, and then you get into it, and then maybe a couple of variations come up. Oh, I wasn't supposed to pay for that. Well, you are. It's not part of the scope. Right, you know, and then you get other things that are happening throughout that job. But again, dealing with some of the worst humans on the planet during COVID, it's now helped me identify the character traits and the people that I don't want to work with. And then I explain that to people. But it's not only that. Say, for example, you got a client who doesn't pay you on time. Well, you have to have a process in place so that they pay. And if they don't pay, there's consequences for it. Okay, because when you borrow from the Bank of Pascon, it's very fucking expensive. So when you go past that payment day, oh, cool, here's 25% in interest. Oh, 25%, hey, I've had clients say this to me. Oh, George, 25% is very high. Can we reduce that? I said, I can eliminate it if you like. They're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. The first way, pay me on fucking time.
Pay me.
Just pay me. And you will not pay this once, I promise you. I don't want to go through the admin of having to send you a speeding ticket.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And the second way we remove this is I rip up the contract right now. Because if you're telling me you are going to be late with all of your payments, it's a bad business decision and I don't want to get into it.
Yep.
I've got enough problem. I've got enough issues and stresses that I don't need that in my life. So you tell me which one you want to do. Also, what happens when you don't pay your Amex the next day? The next day.
Ring. Bang. Phone's ringing.
It's not even that. It's you get hit up with 27, 30% the next day. And that's $1 billion organization.
And everyone accepts it.
That's right. And they go, oh, yeah, fair enough. 25, 20, 30%, here you go. I'm cheap at 25. You should be thanking me. So I explain it to them like that, not as direct, but I explain it to them so they understand. Each project needs to work independently as well. So just because this guy doesn't pay you, you shouldn't use the money from this project to fund that one. No, you don't pay. We stop the job and here's your fee every day. And here's our reestablishment fee. And here's this and here's this. If it gets to that point where they're continuously doing that, then you have an obligation to terminate the contract. I wish I went back into, if I could go back in time, I would have terminated probably at least three of the jobs that we were working on, at least three of them.
You probably
and said, right, you're not paying, here you go, here you
even
go,
even if
you
terminated one or two of them, the third one would have put towed out the line. That's what ends up happening. It's only because you allow it to happen.
That's right.
That it continues
because you
to
don't
happen.
Know any better. What's it? Customer's always right. That's just, customer's always right. I've got to be focused on the customer. That's part of the saying.
Yep.
The customer is always right in matters of taste. That's how the saying goes. But somewhere along the line.
We cut off the taste.
Yeah. They just go, in matters of taste got ridden of. So to justify, you know, or to have a bad customer treat you like shit, no. Your customer is always right in matters of taste. If you want green floors and hot pink ceilings, absolutely, we can do
Sounds
that.
Sounds great.
If you want me to paint the ceiling with a jackhammer, you're a fucking idiot. Like, I'm not going to do that. Okay? You're not always right. You are right in matters of taste. Everything else is on me. And this is where you have to establish yourself as the expert, right? Because if you have a problem with your heart, you're not going to go see the GP. You're going to go see a cardiologist. When you see the cardiologist, he's going to go look at you and go, cool, just see Mary at the front desk. And when you go see Mary, bang, $500. Because he's a professional. He's dedicated his life to the study of the heart. He's the best at what he does.
Mm.
Now, I try and say that to my people that come to events. Like, be the best at what you do. Be the professional. Be shown, show your clients that you are the professional, because then people will pay for that. Now, when you go and get heart surgery and they say, cool, it's going to cost you 80 grand to get heart surgery, you don't go to the cardiologist, say, listen, I've got a bloke in Turkey that can do it for $30,000, right? If you match his price, I'll get you to work on my heart. That's going to save my life. They'll never do that, right? So you have to do the same thing with your construction business and establish yourself in a way that goes, no, I'm willing to pay for this product and this service at this price with this person because he's the expert. Now, this works in every space, all right? As in, whether you're doing townhouses, whether you're doing high-end residential, whether you're
challenging,
doing...
It's challenging, though.
It's challenging. I didn't say it was easy.
If you're a plasterer and you're and the equivalent guy, let's take the 80 grand, 30 grand scenario.
Yeah.
You've got a guy at 80 grand who does a tip-top job and you've got a guy at 30 grand who still has that plaster on that wall.
Yep.
You have to be working for the right person who wants the right high-end...
That's right.
Compared to how much you pay per square meter of plaster doing your jobs,
yes,
to someone who's doing, let's say, a job in one of the outer ring suburbs,
yes,
you're paying more than they are.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, you could work as hard as you want on a project. You could build a perfect frame, perfect structure, perfect waterproofing, mm-hmm. perfect roof, perfect landscaping. You fuck the plaster and paint, the job's a disaster.
Ain't that the truth?
But that's the thing, right? That's what people see.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, like, that's a great example using a plasterer. Okay, now this is where I'm saying you have to change your focus and your mindset to a collaborative approach. You are already, as a builder, you've gone in on 80 grand. That was your budget.
Yeah, that's what
that was your budget, $80,000. You're already making money on that 80 grand with your margin.
Yes.
You're winning. You won the job. Give the product and the service that you said you were going to deliver. Yeah. Don't go to the 30 grand because now I'm going to pick up an extra this much money across
How
all these packages.
How much does that happen though with the margin zero? Everyone's heard the stories about these tier two and three builders who have gone in at
that's
zero
right.
margin and their entire way about making money is to crunch the subby.
One of my mates, I used to work at, I won't say the name, but a big tier one construction company. I still know people that work there. One of them's actually a director at the company now. And I actually asked him, we catch up for dinner once a quarter generally. I go, hey, what are your margins? Out of curiosity. These guys build skyscrapers. All right. I go, what are your margins? He goes, generally 2%.
2%.
Yeah, 2-3%. He goes, but what we do is we then take on D&C and they'll get one of the formwork companies to D&C the whole job. And then he goes, we try pick up another 2-3% on the structure and facade and this and this and this. And he goes, yeah, they'll probably go hard and screw the trades and get them to come in and do that.
Another 2% there and they try and make 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. They try and do that. But more often than not, it goes the other way, right? Because especially during COVID, that's why it was a ProBuild went under. They were a tier one construction company at the time and they went under for those exact reasons.
You
they
see that
proceed,
they
couldn't They
released
that.
In the financial review, they had Island Brown Construction, they had Hutchinson,
yep.
and they're saying that the industry has turned around Australia-wide. We have gone, where Hutchinson turned over $2 billion and made $40 million and their 2.3% profit, killing it. Like, put
Where's
out,
the
put
percep- it, That's a perception, isn't it?
You know, they put it out to the market in like a financial newspaper that's meant to be like, it's not a tabloid.
Yeah.
They're actually saying, we are doing great and this is this is the optics of the market, that the market is recovering because we made 2%. And you go, 2%? What do you mean 2%?
It is ludicrous, right? The other thing with builders, they get into that space and like, how much, they're pricing their very first job. How much margin do you put on it? Like, 10%. Who the fuck established 10% as fair and reasonable for a cost on anything?
On anything.
On anything.
Yep.
Who said, 10% is fair? That's what it should be. Or 15% should be fair. Why not make 30? Why not make 50?
Yeah.
Why not make 40? Like, why? Why do you do that? I'll never win the job. No, when value exceeds price, people make decisions. Okay, because if price was the be-all and end-all, there'd be no reason for people driving Mercedes or Ferraris or buying a Gucci bag or wearing whatever or buying in an expensive suburb compared to a lower suburb. Price is not the determining factor in most cases. Okay, there's other things that come with it too. So, you know, when, in our space with the residential and the higher end space, that's what I really focus on. Well, what makes us different from every single other person? There's this builder in Gold Coast, Brisbane, called Greyer. Have you heard of them before?
The Greyer Brothers, yeah. I know them.
Yeah, yep. Well, there you go. I followed them early days when they had, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000 followers on their page or whatever. And I've seen their progression, and I often use them as an example because I think what they've done to establish themselves as a powerful brand has completely led to where their success is now. Yes, they did the work and everything else that followed, but as part of what they did.
I was staying up in Brisbane a couple months ago on James Street, which is like one of the main streets there. They are doing a shit basement on James Street, five levels deep in solid rock.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just up there and I looked at it and they're breaking it. Like, and I don't mind the sound of breakers in the morning. You know, it fills
it's
my
in your
soul.
Blood, I was gonna say.
And so, but I'm just looking at it and I'm going, fuck, that is hard.
They
yucca.
Do some hard jobs. Yeah, hard done job. Some, I've seen some projects that they've done. I'm like, shit, that's a difficult build. I've seen them suspend a whole house whilst they built under it. So they've done some hard stuff too. So I'm sure they're very smart and very capable builders. But aside from that, they've built such a powerful brand around their whole Greyer brand. That do you think when a client comes and approaches them and says, hey, I want you to build my house, they go, here's the price. And they go, oh, hang on, Pascon can do it for $50,000 less. They'll just laugh you out of their office. Mm. Okay. They have established themselves. This is where we're at. When was the last time you drove past Ferrari and said, end of financial year sale?
Black Friday sale.
Yeah, the Black Friday sale or the high-end brands, Gucci or wherever, whichever brand you can think
they
of.
Never
the high-end.
Have sales.
They never. It would be detrimental to their brand to have a sale. All right? It would be detrimental. People would probably buy less of it because they have a sale.
Mm.
Okay? That's why they can charge ridiculous
prices for their service. Their margin ain't no 10%.
No, exactly right. Look, I had a mate that worked in the States for at least 2-3 years, and he was working for a construction company. I worked with him at another building company as well. And he was saying if they had a job that slipped under 35% in margin, in profit, he goes, it was a disaster. Like board meetings, like everyone was there.
No.
He goes, full on. And this is big. He worked for a decent-sized organization that was turning over 100 million a year. And he goes, if they had a project that went to 35%, they would lose their mind. There would be alarm bells everywhere. He goes, they were like 40 to 50% on pretty much all of their projects. You're talking about a place that's 16 hours away comparatively to here, and look at the difference in their mindset and how they deliver it. The problem is back when my dad was building and he was a builder, if he was seen as the expert. You know, he was seeing like the client, he would say, you know, you need to put a beam up here to the client. He goes, oh, thanks, Steve. That's great. I really appreciate you looking after me. Now it's like if a builder goes to a client and says, hey, you need to put a beam up here because it's not allowed for your house is going to fall down. That's bullshit. Goes onto Google and tries to find it and goes onto ChatGPT and trying to get the information because they don't trust him. They think he's trying to rip him off or, you know, it's not required. It's not on the drawings. I said, hang on, just because it's not on the drawings doesn't mean it's not required. I'm a builder. I know what I'm looking at.
Well, and that's what it was meant to be and is meant to be in my mind. Yeah. I think that the project, because of how it's, the industry has evolved and builders have become more high-end project managers rather than the people like it used to be that physically you building. Employed the carpenters, the tilers, the concreters, everything. And so I don't like with a lot of different pressures is why it ended up happening. But you ended up being project managers who knew how to do everything.
Yeah.
And some people are so brilliant at that. Mm. I work with one guy who can argue with me on the finest detail of retention packages.
Yep.
And then talk specific Latin names for plants that are going in the nature strip.
Yeah.
And he's just amazing.
Yeah.
Carpet, you know, you name it, all over, everything. That it's a pleasure to work with him. Yeah. He's hard. He's a hard guy to get anything, you know. He knows exactly what I need to do, when I need to do it, even sometimes before we do.
Yeah.
Because of the staging and the scheduling and everything. But that's a pleasure. It's the people who come on board that have sort of degraded the builder's name that don't really have an idea, leave the people with the set of plans or the tradesman with the set of plans and then whack you with the contract after.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
Exactly right. And that is a problem there, and it's a shame because the industry has that name now. You know, dodgy builders. That's what we all are. When you think of builders, oh, you're a dodgy builder.
Well, we spoke about like, do we want a dodgy builder on the podcast? Is what we were saying.
There you go. You got to find. Oh, look, and I say this at my events. I go, I'm yet to meet one. believe it or not. I'm yet to meet someone that genuinely goes out there to do the wrong thing by their clients or the wrong thing by their trades. I haven't met one yet. Not to say they don't exist, right? But there's also dentists that fill you up when they put you under to remove a tooth. There's also florists that sell cocaine out of the back of their shop.
That's a very good point.
There's also accountants that cook the books for the mafia, all right? There's bad people in every industry. It doesn't make the industry bad. Predominantly from what I've seen, especially since doing Builder Elite, is most people, I'd say 90% of people and builders out there genuinely want to do the right thing and do the right thing by themselves, their family, their trades, their clients, but they just lack that knowledge. You don't know what you don't know. Where we're trying to fill that gap.
When I first started, I was on every job and over the top of it all. Yep. I'd sign any contract, would not scribble out anything. And
Ideal clients, anyone with a pulse when you first start.
Don't worry. I used to tell people, don't worry about the contract. Worry about the job. Yeah. Do a good job.
Yeah.
I never got hit with anything.
Yeah.
And then if you do start that contractual argument, then all of a sudden the focus isn't on the job anymore, and it's lawyers at 10 paces, and it's everything else. When for years I never had an issue, and I signed my life away to anything on a contract and sent it back, but then over delivered. And mostly people were happy.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I very rarely had an upset client. Now, I've had many upset clients because it's your scale, you know, it's impossible it's not
exactly
to.
Exactly right.
But back then, I say to people these days, like, you know, build a relationship with the people that you're working for.
I agree.
Do a good job. Like, I can't say enough of what that is to do a good job. And. Yeah. But I was going to tell a story before, but you were on a good thought, so I let you go. Speaking about people who are hard and you don't really, most people want to work in. I work with a guy, a builder, and the developer was on site every day living next door, who was building his new house, moving into the next one. And they ended up having arguments, going to court. The guy stood on a 44-gallon drum looking over the fence every day, writing down times of shit coming.
Yeah.
And he actually found that the basement block work, instead of being set at face of block, was set at center line of block, and his basement was 200 mil too small.
Yeah.
He waited until the slab had been poured, waited until the frame had been up.
Yeah,
And then bought it up, tried to get out of 50% of the contract or something because of
Scum of the earth.
Piece of shit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And if that builder ended up going broke because...
What a crying shame. He's probably an excellent builder too.
And he was an excellent builder, and the blocky and everyone was working in and, you know, trying to make it happen. And there are just sometimes some things that happen.
Yeah.
That's really unfortunate. Set a line, block
line.
These
things happen. I mean, it was an honest mistake, you know. And look, I've built a job where the owner lived next door. I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, as you said, looking over every day, coming on site as they please, you know, I won't do that again. Like, or I'll just put real strict parameters in, like a massive hoarding with chain, with bar mesh on it. Like, I won't let people on the job. And that's like, again, one of the rules I've changed since COVID is I say, oh yeah, come on, whenever you want, just go have a look. You'll be right. You know, I'll, you know, customer service. It's like, no, you do not get to inspect this site. This is not your site. It's mine. This isn't your house. It's my house. When I give it to you, it's your house. Okay, we have a fortnightly meeting? Absolutely. Let's go down. We'll walk through. We'll show you everything. But you don't get to walk on site and see an unfinished product, get upset over it, send me a 40-page email. I'm not your fucking therapist. I'm not your sibling. I'm not your partner. I'm not your child. Okay, I'm your builder. Respect the parameters here. And it's like, you know, they'll go and say that and they go, oh, this wall's in the wrong spot and this, you've ruined my home. Hang on. That's a temporary wall. We're just bracing at the moment because we need to do this. Oh, sorry. So you upset yourself.
Never say sorry.
No, you upset yourself. You upset me. You upset the team, right? You delay us because I have to then read a 40-page email, all right? Because of your mental state. That's not my. That's not my concern.
Now let's talk. I have noticed a fair bit online that there was a builder who wrote into the contract about that the building inspector. Everyone know who he is.
Yep.
Now that is a guy who absolutely knows his shit. No one can deny that, but I did see him say that the waterproofing went 290 mil instead of 300 mil. And like, fuck, that's like, it's hard. It's hard because there'd be people out there that hold up a payment, you know, like a drawdown on a loan or something like that because of 7 mil of waterproofing, you know, that it had to extend up a wall. How do you go? Have you had someone like that engaged on
a job? I've had people in the past where, you know, the owner will get someone in and I approach it in a couple of ways. First of all, I address it at the start of the job before we even start on site. And I say, we don't accept third party inspections. All right. And I do this for a reason. If you don't, and I say this, if you don't trust me to build this house, don't fucking sign the contract. Like, I'm serious. I am a professional. This guy's not registered. Yes, he's smart. He's got nothing on the line. All right. It's very easy to come in and critique other people's work. If you don't trust me as the expert who has dedicated his life to construction and to high-end homes, if you don't trust me to build your house the way it should be built, then you shouldn't sign the contract. Now, this guy often does, we'll pick on it, the volume style homes.
He does, all right?
And he does a lot of those projects. He does other ones too. And I'm sure other inspectors go out there and they inspect other things as well, which is fine. But what I'm getting at is we will build it in accordance with standards, acts, so on and so forth. Do things come up? Yes. Every single time. Because
is the waterproofing sometimes going to be 8 mil shy?
It might be, yeah. And that's the thing is, right, is it's when robots take over, we're not going to have this issue. Everything will be perfect. But now there's human error. Okay, I had a client argue with me on the trowel finish on a slab. And I said, it is a handmade product, it is a man-made product. Okay, that is the finish of it. You cannot get it perfect. That's what it's like. Oh, no, that's bullshit. He went and got expert reports and this and this.
But, what do you want from it? Like, exactly. What do you want? Do you
exactly.
want
to, it's you interpretation. Want me to grind it? All you're doing right now is you're telling me your interpretation of this issue. It's a non-issue. That's not an issue here. Okay, that is your perception. That
did
is
you
your
end
opinion.
Up changing the concrete?
No, not at all. Not at all. But he was one of the guys that didn't pay, so I wasn't ever going to go back and do the work anyway.
Yeah.
But regardless, he was trying to argue that as basis for not paying. And we went all the way to court with this one. I took him all the way. Like, fuck yeah, you're not going to pay me, I'll make you pay anyway.
It's really interesting because I end up saying to people, actually, I had one the other day. So we had a 300 grand bill due, not being paid because of like three loads or something.
Three grand, 300 grand for three loads.
Yeah. And I said, the three loads are like $1,000.
Yeah. Take 5,000 off.
You know what I said? Take 10, 20.
Yeah, take 20.
Take 20. We'll be I said because month. Because we'll get all of the reports. The guy's on holiday, can't get the we cannot get these loads proofed. But the problem is you're not asking me to prove the loads. You're asking me to drop the loads, not charge you for them, regardless of if we did them or not. So I get my 299 grand.
Yeah.
Because that's actually what the discussion is. How much do I need 299 grand? Yeah. Do I need it more than proving the three loads?
Yeah.
Or do I need it less? And in which case, you know, now we can have – and I said, don't pay me. Just wait, I'll get it. We ended up proving the three loads. Yeah. Then, you know, Evan asked me for a discount.
Yeah.
Anyway. And I said, well, if you had have asked me for a discount at the beginning –
yeah, perhaps we could have worked something out. I could have had the opportunity to go speak to my suppliers to see if I can get a discount. Now
and
I don't
can
have
work
that.
Work it in the middle.
Now I don't have that opportunity to do so.
Correct. And not only that, you went about it and we've created all of this further paperwork.
That's right.
And all of this time and everything else. No, there is no discount anymore. Yeah. But it's I find that people use the money already earned as the lever or the mechanism to try and get things for cheaper.
Yeah, and again, collaboration. That's what it comes down to. I don't want to have a fight with you. I want you to win because when you win, I win.
Yeah.
I'm already making money on the job. Look, as long as we're all getting paid for it, like there's no issue with that. I've got no issues. And, you know, it might be the case of going, all right, if I pay you 300, if I pay you 100% of your contract, then I'm out of pocket if you go broke the next day and I've got to get rid of these three loads. Okay, cool. Take 10, hold 10 grand.
Fair.
That's fine, exactly. But then absolutely. You say that too. Yeah. So, and you know, because he's doing the right thing, working with integrity, doing all that sort of stuff, and you've got that relationship, that's a massive thing.
I often have a thing about, like, with my staff sometimes to try and get that, you know, because that's now a company value. We speak about that a bit here, you know, like where those lines are and what is fair and what's acceptable that's and right. what isn't.
Yep.
And to try and get alignment on that with your employees, like
that's hard too.
It is hard
because I've had that as well. I've had employees like almost burn subbies. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
I go, I want to work with him again. Okay, like we want to as a company. He's a good contractor. We want to work with him. Don't go out and shave 10 grand off his price for this reason. If he's done something wrong, he'll fix it. Or we'll work together, but don't burn the trade and say, we're not paying you this, we're not paying you that. You should have allowed that. You should have done this.
We have such a huge problem with waiting time for the trucks. And yeah, so waiting time, we send our trucks out, you know.
And especially they're just sitting on the street.
And they're sitting down waiting. And then at the end of the day, there's a traffic controller or someone on site saying, yeah, you'll get paid waiting time. But then if you have 20 trucks getting $200 an hour, you know, you're up for $4,000. They wait for a few
for
hours,
an hour, yeah.
You know. And then once it gets out to the down to the accounts,
yeah.
Trucks are being told on site. Deals are being made in the office. And then there's this, you know, push and pull. And this huge discrepancy. And it gets so pointy when they've signed on site for it as well.
Yeah.
So now the truck driver expects that payment.
Yeah,
and how you massage that and how you try and get the best outcome for everyone.
Yeah,
because that's what we're trying to do.
That's right.
I don't want to be charging a guy.
Yeah, of course, you don't want to. If you can avoid it.
20 grand extra because the trucks were waiting for something outside of his control.
That's it.
But it was definitely out of the truck driver's control.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Then you told him you would pay.
Yeah.
And then you signed that you would pay.
Because do you have a lot of contractors that subby to you?
Yeah, so most of my trucking company is subcontractors.
Yeah, which makes sense.
So 80 to 90% of it.
1,000 employees and all the trucks and everything.
No, yeah, no one wants any more employees than they have to have in this day and age.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've got about 5 or 10 minutes left. I always open up the microphone to people at the very end of it to talk about what they want to talk about, just in case I've led the conversation a little bit hard. Do you have any thoughts or feelings that you'd like to throw out there at the end of it all?
Look, I reckon the industry it's tough. It's tough to be really good and really successful here. Not impossible. No one said it was going to be easy, yeah? No one said having kids and raising kids was ever going to be easy. No one said anything in life was ever going to be easy. Things are going to be difficult. But in order for you to be successful in this construction space with the nature of how everything is today, you as an individual, as a business owner, needs to get better. That's what it is. You got to go connect with the right people, seek out a mentor or an advisor, surround yourself with quality employees, quality trades, quality suppliers. Okay, we use the same guys all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I try not to vent unless someone comes to me. If you say to me, hey, George, I've got an electrician. He's a fucking gun. He's the best. He did this job. He's so good. Just give him a go. So, all right, well, that's come from a reputable source. I can do my own background checks. I can do all that stuff and go, okay, great. We just onboarded a fantastic electrician. For the youngsters out there, I'm going to go a little bit left of field. If you're an apprentice right now, I've done a post on apprentice once and it got a lot of hate because I said all apprentices should stop bitching and moaning for the money that they're making, right? And I got a lot of hate for it. But if you listen to
that
if you listen to the whole video, I actually go on to say, if you dedicate your career now over the next 4 years to become the best carpenter, the best electrician, the best plumber, whatever your apprenticeship is, the best bricklayer, you dedicate yourself. Don't worry about the money. Just dedicate yourself now and become really good at what you do. You are going to make a very, very comfortable life for yourself in the future because the industry sorely needs skilled, competent, qualified tradespeople.
But properly skilled.
Properly
not
skilled.
Just with your ticket.
All the old school properly guys skilled, yeah. are retiring or they're dead. Okay, that's what's happening and they're moving on. And then the people replacing them, say there's 20 guys leaving, there's 5 replacing them. So you go out there and get a trade skillship right now and get your apprenticeship and be qualified. By the time you come out of that, if you are really good at what you do, you get organized, then you take it further. Yeah, you don't stop, I'm a qualified carpenter, that's it. That was probably the one arrogance I had when I first started. I was like, I'm a gun builder. I don't need to focus on anything else other than building because that's all I'm really good at. And it wasn't until I picked up a book and learned about mindset and learned about leadership and learned about relationships and learned about money that I became better as a builder as a consequence. So go out there, educate yourself, become the very best trade you can possibly be. Builders don't just accept you getting your building license and going, I'm great, that's what it's going to be. No, go out there and become better and better each and every time. Master your trade, master sales, and you'll go a really, really long way in this industry. And the industry sorely needs it.
I absolutely think so. I think that that's perfect to end it up on. George, mate,
thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure.
I appreciate that a lot. And as always, like, subscribe, share, tell people to watch and tune in.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you coming down a lot, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thanks, mate. Take care.
Thank you.